This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. الحمد لله وحده والصلاة والسلام على من لا نبي بعده. أما بعد, first and foremost, عيدكم مبارك, تقبل الله منكم صالح الأعمال. As for me, today is the first of Shawwal of the year 1445 AH, and yes, today is the actual day of Eid. I've had a very long day, and I'm in a, alhamdulillah, good spirit and mood, and I thought that it is high time that I did another library chat. I do realize by the time you are seeing this for the first time, and obviously those are going to be seeing it when they see it on the YouTube channel, of course it might not be Eid for you, but khair for me, today is Eid, and so from my side to all of you, may Allah accept all of our good deeds. A little bit about why there's been a delay in the library chats, and then what our library chat today will be about. So as you're aware that I have left interaction on social media, and I must say that it has been such a breath of fresh air. May I seriously ask those of you that are involved in online wasting time to really consider taking a break from social media. I have found it to be extremely refreshing. Dealing with real people, you find real akhlaq comes out, whereas the online, as you're aware, it really is debilitating, and I think a lot of time is wasted. Me personally, I found too much time being wasted and not much being done, and I really have enjoyed this hiatus, and I think it'll be continuing for a while. Allahu a'lam when I'll be coming back onto social media, but that has not been the main reason why I haven't done any library chats. Primarily, I've been very busy finishing up a book, which you are going to be hearing about very soon. 500 pages, alhamdulillah, or even longer. And I'm very, very happy. I've been engrossed with this. I've been spending my time productively. That was the goal for me, to get off of social media and to really just do books and longer and more fruitful projects. And alhamdulillah, you'll hear about the new book very soon. But I've already spoken about it previously, and it involves an academic study of a trend of Islam, and inshallah it will be published by an academic press. So this will be the first monograph I have, inshallah, bi-idhnillahi ta'ala, will be coming out soon this year. And so that book has pretty much been finished, the draft has been done. So that has been the primary reason why I haven't been doing any library chats. Also, to be honest, the political situation in the world, really, I found it a bit difficult to do specific academic talks. But khair, that wasn't the main reason, because life must go on. And regardless of what is happening in the world politically, regardless of what is happening, we must continue our ibadat. We must continue our studying of knowledge. And yes, that includes deep dives and academic study. That does not change permanently. Yes, yani obviously, if a musibah or calamity happens, it's understood, you're going to take a little bit of time to withdraw and to recuperate, but we never stop preaching and teaching. We never stop benefiting the people regardless of what is happening in the world. And we might reflect the circumstances, might be reflected in what we say, and our speeches and teaching should be changed with regards to the political climate, but still advanced teaching and deep dive still go on. And so because of this, I did take a bit of a hiatus, but we must return back. And so today it will be a bit of a interesting one. I've never done something quite like this. And it's going to be about one of the most famous poems that every single student who has been born and raised in any Arab land will be familiar with at some level. This poem that we're going to be doing very quickly, we're going to be doing this at multiple levels. So I'm telling you from the outset, we're going to be doing this at three levels. The first level, you don't need any background, and it'll just be a quick rehash in English of one of the most famous stories in Arabic. Every Arab from Algeria all the way to Iraq and beyond, every single Arab student that has gone through an Arab high school is aware of this poem, and the majority of them have been forced to study and memorize portions of it in their high school, i.e. this is required reading across the curriculums. And I really mean Tunisia, Algeria, Libya, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the Emirates, Oman, Baghdad, yani Iraq, the entire gamut of Arabic-speaking countries. This poem is pretty much required reading in almost all of the high schools, and even in, I've seen some curriculums as well where it is taught at a advanced level, at the graduate level or at the undergraduate level, as a part of, you know, the repertoire, as a part of the thaqafa or the heritage that one should be aware of one's own civilization and culture, and also as an example of Arabic eloquence, and also as one of the famous historical anecdotes or vignettes, if you like, that is found in the books of history. And so I'm going to be doing this poem in three levels. Level one, I'm going to be doing it basically at the high school level, and that is how an Arab student who has gone through high school would have been exposed to it, and I'll just do it the English version of it so that you know, you're aware. And even if we get to level, you don't get to level two and three, you should be aware this is what the average, you know, Arab reader and Arab student is exposed to. Level one. Level two, I'll be doing it at the, let's say, undergraduate level very quickly. That's not going to be a very deep dive. And I'm going to talk about how variations might occur and we might understand things differently at the level two. My point really is, as usual in library chats, is to go deep. Almost all of my library chats, they have a deeper, if you like, message that I want to give to the advanced students. So if you are not an advanced student, don't worry about it. You can just skip to or skip over level three. Don't worry about it. And you can just benefit from level one. And then level two will be a few minutes, and then you can skip over and just stop the video before I say, now we're going to level three. But level three is where I really, this is for the actual students. So believe it or not, levels one and two, what I'm going to be doing is basically, it's not the primary purpose of the video, even though it's going to be the bulk of the video. So with that, 6 minutes introduction, let me now get to the level one. This is now we're beginning level one. Now, what is level one? Level one is a high school introduction. Level two is an undergraduate. Level three is where I'm going to go into the deep dive and analysis, where I want you to, I'm going to have a deeper message. So level one, what is level one? Level one deals with a very beautiful story, an anecdote that is taught, as I said, in almost every single high school across the Arab speaking world. And it deals with an encounter between Abu Ja'far al-Mansur, the founder of the Abbasid dynasty, and one of the most famous poets of early Islam, Al-Asma'i. Al-Asma'i is a Basran poet who interacted with great scholars like Shafi'i, perhaps even Ahmad ibn Hanbal and others, and he met with all of the icons of that era. Al-Asma'i dies around 216 Hijrah. 216 Hijrah, and that's around 800 or a little bit before 800, 740 I think CE. So Al-Asma'i, 216 Hijrah, is at the pinnacle of the beginning of Islamic sciences, the flourishing of Islamic sciences. And Al-Asma'i is known to be a polymath. He has written books on Arabic poetry, on Arabic philology, on Arabic grammar. He has written books about civilization and a little bit of history. He is also, believe it or not, a zoologist and a botanist. He actually writes about plants and animals, and he's just an observer of many different natural sciences. So Al-Asma'i is somebody who has a very high reputation as an intellectual and a polymath. And the story goes as follows, that Abu Ja'far al-Mansur, the famous Khalifa, the founder, one of the primary icons of the Abbasid dynasty, Abu Ja'far al-Mansur, it is said that his memory was so powerful that he was able to memorize a poem as soon as it was recited to him. And so he could recite it directly from his, as soon as he heard it, he had a photographic memory. If he heard a poem, he would recite it immediately. And there was in his entourage, in the palace, there was a young lad, a slave, who was able to memorize after the second time. And there was also a slave girl who was known for poetry, and she was able to memorize if she had heard something, you know, three times. So if she had heard it three times, then she would be able to memorize it. And so Abu Ja'far al-Mansur, one day he decided he's going to become stingy, and he would not reward the poets what they deserve. In the Islamic time frames, poets would have open sessions with the khulafa, and there would be competitions, and if the poetry was approved by the Khalifa, so the goal was then the Khalifa would give some money and the poet would go away happy. So Abu Ja'far al-Mansur one day became stingy and said, I'm not going to give any poet any money. So they said, how are you going to get out of it? He said, don't worry, I have a plan. Next time the poet came and recited a poem, Abu Ja'far al-Mansur said, what are you talking about? This is plagiarism. This is a well-known poem. And the poet would become indigent. What do you mean? I'm the one who wrote this poem. How can you possibly say that this poem has been written by somebody else? Abu Ja'far al-Mansur said, look, I know this already. And because he had already wanted to memorize the poem when he heard it the first time, and so he would recite it back. And then he would say, and in fact, you know what? Even the slave of mine knows it. And so that slave, because he'd memorized everything, if you heard it twice, so he heard it once from Al-Asma'i, once from the poet, once from the caliph, and then he would say it. And then he goes, look, even this girl here. And then he would bring the slave girl, and the slave girl would recite the same couplet or the same poem. So the poet would go away mystified. How is this? I'm the one who wrote this poem. How could Al-Asma'i and this random, ghulam and the slave girl, how could they all know this poem? So this happened a few times, and the news spread amongst the poets that what's going on here, that doesn't make any sense. And so it is said, Al-Asma'i, this polymath, said, this is a matter that has been pre-planned. This is a trick that the Khalifa is doing, and I am going to break this trick. And what the Khalifa had announced, what was usually done in the past, was that the poem would be written on parchment, whatever. And so the Khalifa would say, whatever is the weight of the parchment, give the gold, in return. So whatever, however much the poem weighs, if it's a short poem, if it's a long poem, depending on that, the gold or the silver would be given. So Al-Asma'i decided to trick the Khalifa. And Al-Asma'i went, he said, I'm going to prepare a poem that nobody can possibly memorize. And this poem is considered to be, this is how it is taught in high school. So remember, this is level one. It is said to be the most eloquent or the most difficult poem ever written. And it is mentioned as a part of the legacy of Al-Asma'i. And so Al-Asma'i said, I'm going to trick the Khalifa. So what did Al-Asma'i do? Al-Asma'i went in disguise. He put on a turban and he wrapped it all around himself because the Khalifa would recognize him. So he went as if he's a Bedouin. He dressed up in a very different manner, and he kind of, partially covered his face, which was common at the time. If you were from a particular area, you would be covering the face even as a man. And so he did this. He dressed up in that garb and he was granted the audience. And he said, I have a poem. But remember the condition that if it is a new poem and you like it, you must pay me its weight, how heavy it is. And the Khalifa said, yes, indeed, I will do that. And so he composed this famous poem, which is called the Song of the Nightingale, the Song of the Nightingale. And I will quickly recite it, I don't have a melodious voice, but I will just quickly recite it in whatever voice I can. And the translation hopefully will be coming on your screen. We'll go over it. And all of this is level one, as I said. Then after we're done, we're going to quickly go over level two. And then the point really of the whole library chat is really the level three. So how does this poem begin? This is the Song of the Nightingale by Al-Asma'i. Al-Asma'i said, صوت صفير البلبل هيج قلب الثمن الماء والزهر معا مع زهر لحظ المقل وأنت يا سيدني وسيدي ومولني فكم تيمني غزيل عقيقلي قطفته من وجنة من لثم ورد الخاجل فقال لا 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 وقد غدا مهروني والخود مال طربا من فعل هذا الرجل فولولت وولولت ولي ولي يا ويللي فقلت لا تولوني وبين اللؤلؤ لي قالت له حين كذا انهض وجد بالنقل وفتية سقونني قهيوة كالعسلل شممته بأناف أزكى من القرنفل في وسط بستان حلي بالزهر والسرول لي والعود دندندن لي والطبل طب 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 لي طب 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 لي والسقف قد سقسق لي والرقص قد طاب إلي شوى شوى وشاهي على ورق سفرجلي وغرد القمر يصيح مللا في مللي ولو تراني راكبا على حمار أهزلي يمشي على ثلاثة كمشية العرنجلي والناس ترجم جملي في السوق بالقلقاللي والكل كعكعكعكع من خلفي ومن حويللي لكن مشيت هاربا من خشية العنقنقل إلى لقاء ملك معظم مبجل يأمرني بخلعة حمراء كالدمدم لي أجر فيه ماشيا مبغددا للذيل أنا الأديب الألمعي من حي أرض الموصن نظمت قطعا زخرفت يعجز عنه الأدبل أقول في مطلعها صوت صفير البلبل. Now, obviously, you can find this in much better voices online. Literally, just Google on YouTube, Sawtu Safir al-Bulbuli, the Nightingale Song, and you will find people in much more melodious voices than mine. And of course, the point is that he is now writing a poem that apparently the Khalifa cannot memorize. So the Khalifa is completely, you know, jaw-struck. He's like completely bamboozled. What is this? I've never heard this. Obviously, you even without knowing any Arabic, you see how complex these, you know, bizarre words are used, the sounds and whatnot, and he wasn't able to memorize this. So he said to the ghulam, were you able to memorize? He goes, I couldn't do anything. And he said to the jariya, to the slave girl, were you? He goes, I couldn't do anything. So he said, okay, well, I have to give you your gift then. And so he says, the Al-Asma'i apparently said that, oh Khalifa, I only had a large marble slab that I inherited from my father, and I wrote the poem on the slab. And so he brought the slab out, and the slab obviously is going to weigh like a ton of gold or whatever. And so Abu Ja'far al-Mansur said, this is a trick. You must be Al-Asma'i. And so Al-Asma'i unveiled himself and he goes, indeed, I am Al-Asma'i. And Khalifa, you have to honor me by giving me the gold. And the Khalifa said, I cannot do this. So because obviously it's a ton of gold. So Al-Asma'i said that, in that case, I have one request, and that is you start giving the poets their share and stop tricking the poets. And so Abu Ja'far al-Mansur agreed to this condition, and things came back to normal. Now, very quickly, as usual, all Arabic poem, and this might be a shock to those of you that have never studied Arabic poems are always or almost always romantic. There's always a romance, there's always a ghazal. And by the way, this is even pre-Islamic, early Islamic, this is the reality of poetry. Again, people, this is how it is, and you just have to realize that it is what it is, that a lot of times the poetry that we find of the early Umayyad and the Abbasid era that is written by mainstream Muslim scholars and whatnot, there's always a ghazal, and that is how it is. And so he begins with this poem. He goes, Sawtu Safir al-Bulbuli, the singing of the nightingale. Al-Bulbul is the nightingale. Hayyaja qalbi al-thamili, it caused my drunken heart to stir. So he gives the impression, again, this is how many poets were, that there's a lot of wine and intoxication and women in their poetry, as is always the case. So he said that I was lying in a drunken stupor and I heard the nightingale sing. Al-ma' wa zahru ma'an ma'a zahri lahd al-muqali. Now he is saying that when the nightingale is singing, I'm imagining the girl that I love. Her face is as beautiful as water and roses combined, together with her eyes, dark pupils tinged with rosy red. So this is again a common trope to describe the beauty of your beloved, and typically you describe it in a manner that is not vulgar, that you describe it with her face or her hair or her eyes. You know, this is the reality of even pre-Islamic and Islamic, that you don't really get to stuff that might be considered vulgar, and so you describe, you know, stuff that is generic, and especially the eyes, her beauty of the eyes, and so, and the rosy cheeks are being described over here. So he says that the sound of the nightingale, it reminded me of the beauty of my beloved, the girl that I like. And wa anta ya sayyidali wa sayyidi wa mawlali, and you, O my master, my esteemed leader, my benefactor, فَكَمْ فَكَمْ تَيَمُّنِي غُزَيِّلٌ عُقَيْقَلِي, how great is my desire, فَكَمْ فَكَمْ تَيَمُّنِي, how can I explain to you how strong I desire to be with my غُزَيِّل, my gazelle. The English word gazelle and the Arabic word غَزَل or غُزَيِّل, it's from the same thing. غُزَيِّلٌ عُقَيْقَلِي, عُقَيْقَل is a little gemstone, a ruby. So he's describing his beloved, his you know, fiance, not even a fiance, just the girl that he loves, the little gazelle, my gemstone. So he said, oh my master, if I could only explain to you how much I desire my beloved. قَطَفْتَهُ مِنْ وَجْنَةٍ مِنْ لَثْمِ وَرْدِ الْخَجِلِ, it is as if I plucked a rose from the redness of pecking her shy cheek. So again, he's giving this metaphor that when I kissed her on the cheek, you know, she turned red. And the redness was so beautiful, it is as if I could pluck a rose from that redness. فَقَالَ لَا 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 لَا, when I kissed her, you know, she exclaimed, لَا 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 لَا, no, 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 oh, no, 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 you know, don't do this, لَا 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 لَا, وَقَدْ غَدَى مُهَرْوِلِي, and she turned away and she fled. وَالْخُودُ مَالَ طَرَبًا مِنْ فِعْلِ هَذَا الرَّجُلِ, even though as she is fleeing, her al-khudu mala talab, on her nubile figure, she's a young girl, so her nubile figure almost danced from what the man had done. In other words, she's ecstatic and her shyness is there, but also also she's excited that her beloved has kissed her. So Al-Asma'i is describing both the excitement and the shyness at the same time. فَوَلْوَلَتْ وَوَلْوَلَتْ وَلِي وَلِيَّ وَيْلَلِي. And she cried out, woe to me, woe to me. And she said, wali wali ya waylali, my guardian, oh woe to me. Like she's getting help from the guardian. Or, it depends on how you want to describe, you know, this translation, you could say that Al-Asma'i is saying that I feared her guardian, that what if her wali comes? And ya wayluli, oh woe to me, what if her guardian were to come? You know, her father, whatever, to come. And, you know, I've done this kiss to her. So he's now, you know, describing his own fear. So both of them can be translated in a different way in this regard. فَقُلْتُ لَا تُوَلْوِلِي وَبَيِّنِ اللُّؤْلُؤَ لِي. Yet I persisted and I said to her, no need for all of this wailing, no need for all of this wooing. And instead, show me your beautiful pearls, your smile. I want to see your smile. فَقَالَتْ لَهُ حِينَ كَذَا إِنْهَضْ وَجِدَّ بِالنُّقَلِ. She said, if that be the case, then show some seriousness and bring the requisite goods, bring the mahr, i.e. what do you have to offer and come and propose for my hand? I want to see what you have to offer and come and propose for my hand. Then, just like with classical poetry, even in English that this happens, another act begins. So when you're reading early Islamic poetry or pre-Islamic poetry, you have to realize it's composed in scenes. And if you don't understand this, when a new scene occurs, you're like, what is going on here? This is now a completely new scene here. And this scene now, he is now imagining himself in a previous memory. So he is so ecstatic that the girl has said that, you know, bring me your mahar and I'll accept your proposal. The girl has basically said, I'm willing to marry you, but I need to see what you have to offer. So then he now goes back to another part of his life. Either this is imaginary, i.e. he is literally imagining this, he's so ecstatic, or he's basically describing another scene that has occurred to him. وَفِتْيَةٌ سَقَوْنَنِي قُهَيْوَةٌ كَالْعَسْلَلِي. That it was maybe in the past, or it was as if a young group of ladies, or a group of young ladies, are feeding me wine. Now, قُهَيْوَ, قَهْوَ, the classical Arabs actually had a term for wine, that is قَهْوَ, and then it was then used only for coffee. But in early times, قَهْوَ was actually used for wine. قُهَيْوَةٌ, a little bit of wine, كَالْعَسْلَلِ. Now again, guys, I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but poetry is full of references to wine, women, and music and whatnot. That's all, even by great scholars, this is just the way it is. Because that is what poetry is. Not necessarily that they did it, many of them did, many of them didn't. That is the way of poetry. So, قُهَيْوَةٌ كَالْعَسْلَلِ. So, he's now either imagining a scene or he's going back to another time where he had a great time with his life, that he's surrounded by beautiful young ladies and they're feeding him wine, or they're giving him wine as sweet as honey. قُهَيْوَةٌ كَالْعَسْلَلِ. شَمَمْتُهَا بِأَنَا فِي أَزْكَى مِنَ الْقُرُنْفُلِ. I smelt its fragrance of the wine with my own nostrils. I could smell it. It was purer than clothes. I could smell it. You know, that smell that I like, it was purer than clothes. فِي وَسْطِ بُسْتَانٍ حُلِي. While this is happening, I'm in the midst of a garden, beautiful garden. بِالزُّهْرِ. It is بِالزَّهْرِ. It is adorned with flowers. وَالسُّرُورُ. And all pleasure belongs to me. I own happiness. So he's so happy. He is saying, I am surrounded by these beautiful young ladies. They're giving me this wine, and I'm in this garden, and I'm all happy. On top of this, وَالْعُودُ دَنْدَنْدَنَلِي. The guitar is stringing away, and it is coming closer. دَنْدَنْدَنَلِي. So, الْعُودُ دَنْدَنْ. So again, all of this is alliteration. That's one of the reasons why this poem is so interesting. وَالْعُودُ دَنْدَنْدَنَلِي وَالطَّبْلُ طَبْطَبْطَبَلِي. So الْعُودُ دَنْدَنْدَنَلِي means that the guitar, دَنْدَنَ, was right, stringing away. دَنَلِي, coming close to me. وَالطَّبْلُ, and the drums, طَبْطَبْطَبَلِي. That they were beating away all of it for me. And then to give you the impression, he literally puts the sound of the drums. طب طب طبيلا طب 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 طبي طب 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 طبيلي. So the music to my soul. So طبلي, the last طبلي, is like music to my soul. Like طب, like it's music to my soul. And the beginning part, طب طب طبي طب 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 طبي طب, that's like the drum beat. So he puts the drum beat into a poem. والسقف قد سقسق لي. And the roof was whistling for me with the wind blowing through it, right? So the والسقف قد سقسق لي. So there's wind blowing and the roof is now just whistling along with the tunes that I'm hearing, along with the women, along with the sharab, along with the garden. So again, this is for him, Jannah on earth here. والرقص قد طاب إلي. And the dancing was a remedy for me. So the girls were dancing around him, right? شوا شوا وشاهش على ورق سفرجلي. So شوا شوا, grilled meat, is being given to him. Washahishin, some say this is translated like a king. I'll get to this in level two. What does it translate into? Washahish could mean over here, like from Shahin Shah type of a king, right? So that shawa shawa washahishin ala waraqin safarjali, that grilled meat is being presented to me, plenty, on a quince tree leaf, on the leaf of a quince tree, a nice, nice tree plate is being given, and I felt like a king with all of this. وَغَرَّدَ الْقَمَرِ يَصِيحُ مَلَلًا فِي مَلَلِي, and the dove itself is singing. So al-qamari is the dove, the beautiful bird. يَصِيحُ وَغَرَّدَ الْقَمَرِ يَصِيحُ, and that the dove itself is you know, singing in its ululation. مَلَلًا فِي مَلَلِي, adding even more delight to the delight that I was in. Now this is scene number two. We finish in scene number two. Now we go to scene number three. Scene number three is the current state where he is most likely going to the king. So he's describing how he's going to the king. So now he's going to the king. So the girl has accepted his proposal. He was so happy. He gives this act to, surrounded by young ladies being fed wine in this garden that has all of the things around it. And he then says, act number three. وَلَوْ تَرَانِي رَاكِبًا عَلَى حِمَارٍ أَهْزَلِي, if you can only see me riding on my lame donkey. So he doesn't have that wealth, his donkey. He doesn't have a horse, he doesn't have a camel. He has a donkey. On top of that, it is lame. It's not even a proper donkey. يَمْشِي عَلَى ثَلَاثَةٍ كَمَشْيَةِ الْعَرَنْجَلِي, it is walking on three legs, like that of a cripple. Doesn't he have four, you know, proper legs to do? وَالنَّاسُ تَرْجِمْ جَمَلِي, and the people are pelting my ride. He calls it jamal, even though he just said it is a camel, because you're allowed to call any mount a jamal. فِالسُّوقُ بِالْقُلْقُلَلِي, in the souq with large pebbles. So they're irritated, they're frustrated at this guy, either because he's dressed in a poor manner, or because he has this mount, or because he's irritating them, whatever it might be. He's not liked by the people, and so they're throwing pebbles at him. وَالْكُلُّ كَعْكَعْكَعْكَعْ مِنْ خَلْفِي وَمِنْ حُلَيْلَلِي, and the people are running away from me, from behind me, and all around me. They don't like me. لَكِنْ بَشِيتُ هَارِبًا مِنْ خَشْيَةِ الْعَقَنْقَلِي, but I still rushed forward, fearing an evil demise. I didn't stop. I rushed through the crowd, fearing that I would have an evil demise. And where am I going? إِلَى لِقَاءٍ مَلِكٍ مُعَظَّمٍ مُبَجَّلِي, I'm going to meet a great king, one who is admired and respected. Now obviously, the purpose of the poets is to flatter the king. The purpose of the poets is to flatter the sultan and the emir. And the more they flatter, the more gold they get. So this is his flattery now. He's getting to the end here. So the people don't like me, but I have a girl waiting for me. Now I'm rushing to the palace, and I'm going to meet a malikin mu'azzamin mubajjali, a great king who is admired and respected. Ya'muru li bi khil'atin hamra'a kadamdamali, he's going to give me a royal robe, he's going to grant me a beautiful garment that is as red as the blood from a fresh wound, and red is a royal color. So I'm going to have a beautiful robe that's going to be as red as the wound from a fresh blood. أجر فيه ماشيا مبغضدا مذلذلي مبغضدا للذيلي, I shall be walking around for it in this grand garment, and I can now be boastful that I have this beautiful clothes, and I can even let it trail behind me. للذيلي, it's going to go behind me like a royal king. أنا الأديب الألمعي, I am the poet الألمعي. الألمعي can also mean a pearl stone, as if he's trying to say I'm from الألمع, but in reality he's أصمعي, so he invents a name الألمعي. من حي أرض الموصلي, from the land and district of موصل, this is where his ancestors were from. نظمت قطعا زخرفت, I wrote a poem so intricate and beautiful. يعجز عنه الأدبلي, that the greatest of poets are incapable of producing something similar to what I have written. أقول في مطلعها, I say in its first stanza, صوت صفير البلبل, the song of the nightingale, the singing of the nightingale. So he begins the poem as he ended it, and he ends the poem as he begins it. صوت صفير البلبل is the first stanza, صوت صفير البلبل is the last stanza. Now this is level one, and if you want to stop here, realize this is what your average high school student has to memorize in the Arab land. He has to literally memorize Al-Asma'i. I remember when I was at the University of Medina, one of my teachers also told us this story, and he recited this whole poem from memory, and he said that, oh, I spent so many hours memorizing this poem, and I have to admit I was very impressed, and that was my introduction to this poem, because it really sounds so beautiful when it is done by somebody with a better voice than yours truly, and so please do listen to it online in a more beautiful voice. You can listen to Sawtu Safir al-Bulbuli. Now, that's level one. Level two would be to go into a detailed analysis of every single word and sometimes even differences, because here's another point. Every poem, without exception, has variations. There are different wordings, different i'rabs, different harakat. Now, for this presentation, I ignored it and I just chose one version. In reality, there are plenty of versions out there. And even the famous mu'allaqat al-sab'ah, they are not preserved word for word. No poem, I repeat, no poem is preserved word for word, letter for letter. The poems are preserved by their gist, and every single poem has variations that are recorded, because that's human nature. You cannot memorize, you know, poems, literally every haraka for haraka. And even sometimes the writer himself has written his poem, but still the harakat might differ, the i'rab might differ, and that is reality to every single famous Arabic poem. This is no different. And this poem at level 2, we're not going to do it, because I don't see the point in English. A level 2 analysis would be to look at the variations of the poem and to look at the alternative meanings and the obscure words and the grammatical usages to deconstruct the eloquence of the poem. And also, a lot of times, poetry, it is allowed to use phrases that would not be allowed outside of poetry. This is called darura of the poets, darura to shi'r. And it is what the poets are allowed to do, the average Arabic speaker is not allowed to do. So for example, wali wali ya waylali, like that's not really, or mawlalali, right? This is not something that is typically allowed to do. So he said, wa sayyidi wa mawlali. You don't say sayyidi wa mawlali. You would say wa mawla, mawlaya, mawlali. It's not really something you do. Also, faqala la 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 la, four times repetition, right? So many other words. So for example, aqunqali, aqunqali. It's nobody knows what it means. I already said shawa, shawa, washahishin. The word washahish, nobody, it's not a pure Arabic word. It seems to be taken from another language and Arabicized, right? You have different meanings of, if you are serious, wajidda bin nuqali, then bring me a nuqal. Be serious and bring me a nuqal. What is a nuqal? It could mean food, it could mean a mahar, it could mean furniture. Again, all of this is level 2. That what exactly is the meaning of the word? What is the grammatical analysis? And I'm not going to go there because, frankly, it's not an interest to English speaker, and you have to understand Arabic to really benefit this. Now, let us get now to the real point of the lecture for me. I hope, inshallah, this is understandable so far, because, again, these are obscure topics. My purpose, again, for the library chats really is always a deeper dive and a bit of a critical analysis. Now, level 3. Level 3 is to point out that, in fact, despite the fact that this poem is studied by pretty much every single literate Arab on the face of this earth who has gone through schools in Arabic-speaking lands, despite the fact that if you do a simple Google, the most famous poem of Al-Asma'i, you will find this come up numerous times, despite the fact that this is a well-known anecdote that is pretty much like mutawatir, if you like, in terms of its narrations in the popular sphere. The fact of the matter is that the story is simply too good to be true, and it is, of course, a complete myth and fabric. It is a complete fairy tale. There is no authenticity to this whatsoever, and in fact, we can be certain 100% that this story never occurred. Now, what I'm saying is not shocking to Arabic academics, to Arabic linguists. Every single professor of the Arabic language who cares about academics knows exactly what I'm saying. There are many professors who don't care, and so they will. My own teacher, I remember, also thought it was real, and he just said it to me as well. And this leads me to my point number 3, which is really the point of the library chat. And that is the reality of the very difficult topic that when you start taking a look into concepts and ideas that might be very popular, it doesn't matter how popular an idea is, sometimes it just comes out to be a simple fairy tale or myth. Now, I chose a topic and I chose an example that would actually be zero level controversy, and I did this on purpose because the goal here is to demonstrate for you something that has been accepted by large segments of even scholars. The fact of the matter is, many ulama, you will find this, their anecdotes, many famous preachers, many famous you know, people who have graduated from seminaries are going to be quoting Al-Asma'i's poem. And of course, it doesn't matter theologically. There's no aqidah that's based on that. There's no fiqh. There's no... I'm making a point here. And the point is that sometimes something becomes very, very popular and it becomes a type of normative understanding of something. And yet, when you do a deeper dive, you actually find out that they might not be true, or there might be alternative understandings. Now, in this particular case, it's actually very, very easy to demonstrate that this poem is a complete fabrication. Of them, of course, is the fact that there's a, now every single science or every genre, it has its tools to do a deep dive and to look into it. So hadith has its own way, aqidah has its own way, fiqh has its own way, poetry has its own way. Now, because library chat is about poetry, so in poetry, how can you do this? A number of ways. First and foremost, obviously, you look at the diwan of the poet himself. The diwan is his collection of poems. And it's sometimes the poet himself has written it, sometimes his students write it. And generally speaking, obviously, if a poet has written a poem, generally speaking, you will find it in his earliest diwans or dawawin. In this case, there is no reference whatsoever to Al-Asma'i's poem for over 800 years. We don't find this at all. In fact, the first book that has ever mentioned this, it is a book written, 1000 Hijra, if I'm not mistaken, 1100 Hijra, and it's called إعلام الناس بما وقع للبرامكة مع بني العباس. And it is by an obscure, unknown author. We have the manuscript. The manuscript, the author lived around 1000 Hijra. And he's mentioning this incident that allegedly occurred quite literally 900 years before he wrote this book, this manuscript. There is a gap of 900 years. And not just this. It's not just about the earliest time it occurs. We also look at other indications. We look internally. And with regards to poetry, we look at concepts and ideas and words that would it be acceptable to use this in the earliest period of the Abbasids. And again, that's a little bit deeper for our analysis, but no, Al-Asma'i could not and would not have used some of the words that are found in this poem. And even the fact that the poem has non-Arabic words, right? Demdemali, aqanqali, aqunqali. These are non-existent words. Shawa, shawa, wa shahishin. There is no Arabic word. And Al-Asma'i was a proud Arab in his own way. He was very proud of his culture in a halal manner, inshallah. Very, very much involved in his pre-Islamic poetry and classical poetry. There is no way that he would have written a poem that has actually a number of grammatical mistakes and unknown and words that are quite clearly invented. Al-Asma'i would never do such a thing. So even internally, so externally there's evidence, internally there's evidence. Also, another thing you can do is to look at the concepts that are mentioned and the reality. So for example, Abu Ja'far al-Mansur, the founder of the Abbasid dynasty, Abu Ja'far al-Mansur, as far as we know, never interacted with Al-Asma'i. Doesn't make any sense. Al-Asma'i would have been in his early 30s when Abu Ja'far al-Mansur was in power. And he wasn't famous at all for him to already have come to this level. This is a complete ahistorical myth that nobody who understands history could have actually done properly, because Abu Ja'far al-Mansur was not known to be associated with Al-Asma'i. Actually, Al-Asma'i was known to be a close friend and a close associate of Harun al-Rashid. Harun al-Rashid is the grandson of Abu Ja'far al-Mansur. Harun al-Rashid is coming 30 years later when Al-Asma'i is in his 60s. Now he has a relationship with Harun al-Rashid. So to claim that when he was in his 20s and 30s he had a relationship, this is again nonsensical. So you look at the content of the poem and you look at, you know, whether the internal structure and the internal concepts and the internal wording, would it match what is being ascribed to? And to give you a little bit more controversial example, but again, this is a factual example. There is a famous poem allegedly attributed to Hassan ibn Thabit radiallahu an, in which it is alleged that he said that when he versified, he said كَأَنَّكَ خُلِقْتَ كَمَا تَشَاءُ, that you have خُلِقْتَ مُبَرَّأَةً مِنْ غَيْرِ عَيْبٍ, that you have been created without any flaw, as if you have been created the way you desire to be created, right? Now, I'm sorry to again burst your bubble, but again, this is simply factually speaking. This is not an authentic poem of Hassan al-Thabit. It cannot be an authentic poem simply because the content of this notion of perfect creation, and you are creating yourself as you desire to create yourself, it is impossible that these sophisticated theological notions would have been prevalent, you know, in that time frame, in that society. These are concepts and constructs that are coming 400-500-600 years later. The notion of purity of creation and the notion of you have been created in this form and whatnot, you don't find this in this time frame. It is simply impossible. Now, that's not the only evidence. There's other evidence as well that this poem cannot be from Hassan ibn Thabit. But again, it's clearly not. And the motif of being created as you yourself wish in perfect form, this motif, it is clearly stemming and emanating from a time and place far after the first generation of Islam in Medina and Mecca. And this is just one example, internal inconsistency. Now, but again, go back to our example of Al-Asma'i and of Sawt Safir al-Bulbuli. This story is a simple and clear-cut, indubitable example of why just because something is popular, just because something is normative, just because something is accepted, it doesn't mean it has to be a fact. And this poem, if you were to tell your average, you know, person who has again studied it since childhood, that this is a fabrication, your average, even well-read Arab, in fact, your average sheikh, again, this is the way they are. If you would tell them that this is a factually incorrect poem, they would scoff at you. What do you mean? Everybody says it's his. You know, this is reality. Like I said, for the record, every serious academic, whether they're Arab or non-Arab, every serious scholar who is more interested in the integrity of the discipline will tell you this is a fabrication. There's no two opinions about this. It's common sense, actually. Again, even the story, if it's too good to be true, usually it is not true, right? Even the story itself, it reeks of fabrication. But it is actually disconcerting to find how popular it is. And in fact, again, how mutawatir it is. Now, this leads me to the deeper point, and I'm not going to give any other examples because the goal is to cause you to think about this, right? And that is that the deeper point, and this is my level three, and we're going to conclude on this point, is that generally speaking, in these types of books of history and hearsay and just popular culture, a lot of what you find, generally speaking, there is little to no actual evidence. And in fact, in all likelihood, a lot of hearsay and a lot of popular tropes and a lot of popular statements that one finds that we are raised up on, in reality, if you go, you know, deeper into this, you know, we find them to be simply without any basis whatsoever. And of course, when it comes to Arabic poetry, the reality is, who cares? And I agree, who cares? The problem comes that when you go to other genres of knowledge, when you go to things that are more important, and lots and lots and lots of people are taught something and they say it, and somebody comes along and figures out or researches and is like, hey, hold on a sec, even if all of these people are saying it, the reality is that when you really go back, there's just no basis for this statement. And this is where, again, it gets extremely difficult to for the serious researcher. The question arises, should you start bursting popular myths, or should you let the people believe that which maybe, you know, they're just hearsay and there's not much harm to it? But again, the problem comes, what if there is harm to it? And so this is where I'm going to leave over here, and that is the goal here, is to be brave enough to do your own research and to choose, you know, which subjects you want to go do a deep dive in, and which areas where do you think it is wise to be a bit more blunt, or is it wise to let people believe what they want to believe? This is where, again, it gets very difficult here, and we have to look at our own internal biases. Just because a lot of people say something, and just because they are good people, it doesn't mean what they're saying is correct 100%. Now, of course, I'm not talking about astaghfirullah, the usul of deen. That's something that is understood. I'm talking about historical vignettes and anecdotes. And I'm talking about maybe some other facts that are more than just history. But obviously, you know, as for the alhamdulillah, the usul of our deen, alhamdulillah, Allah is al-haq. He has revealed al-haq. He has sent a messenger that teaches us the haq. Of course, we're not talking about that. But I am talking about tropes. I'm talking about vignettes and anecdotes. I'm talking about concepts even that are not from the core of the deen, because the core of the deen, obviously, alhamdulillah, Allah has promised to protect it. I am talking about especially aspects that of our popular culture that we just assume is Islamic or a core of the deen. And even if it might not be un-Islamic, just because a lot of people are doing it doesn't actually make it Islamic. And that's something that, again, a case-by-case basis, I purposely chose a topic and a example that is super easy and it is non-controversial. Who cares if the singing nightingale's poem is actually complete fabrication? It doesn't change anything. However, there are other anecdotes and other issues that sometimes it does cause some disconcertion, and perhaps even more than this. And the point here was to illustrate something as clear-cut as a well-known fabrication amongst academics. It is the curriculum of so many places of learning across the Muslim world. It is in the standard curriculum. And the irony, again, is that even within those institutions, I guarantee you will find academics who care about the truth, who will point out this poem is fabrication. Yet still, popular teachers and preachers and popular, you know, people, and these are erudite, these are people that are learned, but not every learned person really does a critical investigation of every fact they're taught. And that's really one of the points of this library chat, that you can have a degree, even in Arabic literature, and still many people are going to assume that this is from Allah Subh'anaHu Wa Ta'ala. Why? Because when something is so nice to listen to, and it's so beautiful, and it just makes you feel good, you don't even feel like correcting it. And you just would rather it be true. Well, I made an example, or I gave you an example that is non-controversial, and I want you to understand there are examples that, for various aspects, that might actually be a little bit more difficult and bring about more disconcerting thoughts. And this is the problem that, again, many people have when they do research, is that is it worth it to go into a deeper dive or not, and to explain this, or just let the people believe? And that is really a difficult question to answer. But the goal of this library chat is very simple, and that is to understand that sometimes what is popular, even amongst people who have studied, is not necessarily what is academically correct, and the two are not exactly the same. So we constantly ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for hidayah and ikhlas and tawfiq, and we should be brave enough to understand and accept the truth, even if large groups of people are saying otherwise. And with that, inshallah ta'ala, we'll stop this library chat, and inshallah I hope to start resuming on a more semi-regular basis bi'idhnillahi ta'ala. I hope this was of some benefit. Jazakumullahu khairan. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Faya dhulli wa ya khajali idha ma qala li rabbi ama istahiyaita ta'asini ولا تخشى من العتب وتخفي الذنب عن خلقي وتأبى في الهوى قربي فتب مما جنيت عسى تعود إلى رضا